Hey guys, it's JP, REITips.com, and welcome to the replay page for the full, unadulterated, uncut session, Discovering Hidden Profits, The Art of Creative Deal Structuring with Steve Cook. Guys, it was a great session. We had almost 300 people on both the webcast and the telephone with us throughout the entire training session, and it's all meat and potatoes. Now, just a few things you need to know before you jump in. Number one, there is a cheat sheet that I suggest you download and print off and fill out. There's blanks on there. Fill in the blanks as you go along. And the purpose of this is to help you not only consume, but actually retain as much as possible of what you're learning. You can see the download link for that right there. It's a PDF. Number two, this page is temporary. This replay page will not be up forever, so please go ahead and make a point to listen to these audios now while you can. Number three, you'll notice up here at the top it says REI 2009. This is one of two preview calls to give you a taste test for what's in store at a joint venture live event that Sean McCloskey and Steve Cook are doing in June. They are actually doing two of these events. While you're listening, I'm going to suggest you click the link below that you see there to check out the description of this event and just see if it's a good fit for you. There's limited seating, and it's very fairly priced, so I just want to encourage you to check it out. And you're going to notice at the end of this training session, I mention a code. And actually, the code is at the bottom of the cheat sheet there, and it offers quite a sizable discount off the tuition, several hundred dollars. That, as of the time I'm recording this, we still have a few of those available. Not many, but there's still a handful of them there. And if you want to be a part of this event with us and you want to save a bunch of money in the process, then you may want to check that out with a quickness before those spots run out. Okay? So thanks, guys. Enjoy the replay, and we'll catch you next week for Sean McCloskey's training session.
Tonight's presentation is Discovering Hidden Profits, The Art of Creative Deal Structuring. And guys, I'm excited because there's so many people who, well, obviously everybody who's on the call tonight has not had the chance to hear you teach on this. Steve, this is something that you are really the quintessential expert at, in my opinion. This is something that your eyes were open to, how few people really kind of understand some of these concepts. And in today's market more than ever, you're finding ways on a daily basis to apply just small creative tactics that make huge, big differences and that bring in a lot of profits. So I'm excited about what you're about to teach. You want to just jump right into it?
Sure. I'll take it from here. I appreciate it, JP. Well, the topic tonight that we're going to be talking about is deal structuring. And I want to just sort of give everybody just a little bit of a background of where I got started in this business. For those of you who are not aware of my whole story, I started out, I had no money, I had no credit, I was deep in debt, I had no income, and I didn't have any experience in real estate investing. Having said that, there's probably not anybody on the call who was, that is in as bad a shape as I was when I got started. And I just put that out there to let you know that if you think that you're in a bad spot and you can't get up and running in this business, think again, because that isn't an excuse. So I don't want anybody using that as an excuse. I could have used it as an excuse and I wouldn't be here today. But because of where I came from in this business, I had to be much more creative to get things done, because I didn't have the traditional things that, you know, people with good credit or people with good income or people with money in the bank had to help them get deals done. I had to figure out a way to get deals without any of that stuff working in my favor. I had to figure out a way to get them completed. So what I'm going to be sharing with you tonight when I talk about deal structuring is going to be specifically the things that I was doing and do today in my business, but going back from my beginnings and then to how I've evolved today. And so it's going to be mostly with the flipping business, and how I bought homes, wholesaled them, how we buy homes to rehab and able to get deals done with no money, how we get deals sold, and how we get them closed. I'm going to go through all aspects of deal structuring and deal making applying to my business. So if you're in another type of business, you know, related to real estate, maybe a different type of transaction or something, many of the ideas that I do share tonight, you might just have to tweak them a little bit just to fit the different types of business that you're in. But I'm going to be focusing on deal structuring and deal making in the flipping arena. Now, one of the things that I know many investors do is that they worry about where to get the money from to do deals. And this is going to be one of the things. It's not the sole topic of this teaching today, but I do want to just assure all of you that the money is not the difficult part of this business. And even today, when people are crying, saying that, you know, lenders are not lending anymore and the money is just not available, it is still readily available when you're approaching it the right way and going to the right places. So I want everybody, if you think right now that money is not available and it's hard to get, you've got to get that out of your head. As long as you believe that it's hard to get, it's going to be hard for you to get. When I first got started in the business, I didn't think that anybody in the world would lend money to me. And rightfully so, nobody should have loaned money to me. But I ended up having a person lend money to me on my first deal. And within a year of being in the business, I had 25 different lenders and a couple different, 25 private people and a couple of banks that were willing to lend me money within 1 year. And trust me when I tell you, my credit did not turn around. My financial situation was still pretty bleak. I was not credit worthy, but I had many people willing to lend to me because I knew how to put these transactions together. So hopefully you're going to pick up on that as I go through this. Well, let's quickly touch upon the ingredients to making a deal work. In order for you to successfully structure a deal, you need to have a motivated buyer and or a motivated seller. You've got to have somebody in this transaction who is motivated to make the deal work. They must really need to sell or they must really want to buy your property. The desire of the buyer or seller means that they'll go to the extra mile to make things happen. When you have somebody who really wants your property or somebody who really wants to sell their property to you, you've got a person who's going to be willing to listen to you, who's going to be willing to do the things that are necessary in order to structure a deal that works. Oftentimes, one of the biggest challenges that beginners have when trying to put deals together is that they get a property under contract, they go out there and they try to wholesale it, and the deal falls apart for them. They're not able to get the deal closed. And many people sit there and think automatically that flipping doesn't work or wholesaling doesn't work. The problem is that they were not structuring the deals properly and they were leaving the deals up to chance. That's what I see most of the time. I've seen many people have deals where the numbers were beautiful, but they were not able to get the deal done. So the key to what we're going to be talking about today is also understanding the structuring and the financing portion of the deal. Most real estate investors, and this is sad, this is a sad fact even amongst many of the very experienced investors out there, is that they do not understand the financing aspect of the business inside and out. For me, I had to understand the financing business. You have to excuse me.
And bless you.
I was hoping that wasn't going to happen. They don't understand the financing side of the business, and they don't take the time to understand it. Hold on. Okay. All right, so those who, many of the people that I know who have been in the business for a long time are astounded by the deals that I'm able to pull off, and they never thought that they could do those things. They've always just done things traditionally. They just feel that you need 20% down to buy a property, and you just go to the bank, you get your loan, and everything happens. The fact of the matter is, even a well-heeled real estate investor will run out of money pretty quickly if that's the way that they're doing business. I have found that many of the people who approach me and who I teach who have a lot of money to get started in this business, it's very easy for them to get into some deals. But they also run out of money very quickly because buying real estate, you got to face it, it's a money hog. It will eat up everything that you have. When you're in the midst of a deal and you're rehabbing a house, before you know it, if it's $100,000 or $200,000 that you had to start out with, it can be gone in no time. Well, those people then end up not knowing what else to do because they can't get anywhere. They don't know how to put deals together creatively and how to structure them properly to make their money go further. So this is what we're going to hopefully get through with you today. So the elements of a deal that we're going to be looking at, and JP, I'm not going with the cheat sheet, so hopefully if I'm missing something, just let me know.
All right.
The elements of a deal, the four elements that you need to keep in mind are the deal itself, and that's going to be the property, the money to pull the deal off, the experience, and the contacts or the team players. All four of these things are going to be involved in every transaction that you do, and you need to understand each one of these, need to know them inside and out so that you can put all the pieces together in the right way so that the deals get done. Now, I'm going to show you by the end of this call how it's easier to get more money for a property than it is less. And I'm just going to share one example with you, and I want you to stick with me as I go through all of this. But a little while back, one of my students, Jerry Daglish from New Jersey, was talking about a deal that he had on an apartment complex. And this apartment complex, I think he had it tied up for like $375,000, and he was trying to flip it for $400,000, and he was having trouble flipping it. Had a lot of people who wanted to buy it because $400,000 was a great deal. Jerry thought I was crazy when I sat there and I told him, Jerry, it's easier to sell that property for $500,000 than it is to sell it for $400,000. Now, I'm not going to tell you why just yet. Just hang on to toward the end and then you'll start to learn it.
And I know Jerry. He was probably like, get out of here.
He looked at me dumbfounded like I was crazy. But by the time I shared with him how to do that, then he completely understood. The thing is, by structuring deals properly, I make it very easy for people to buy property from me. And I take all the guessing out of it. And when you make it easy for people to buy property, they do. In any event, one of the things I would like for everybody to contemplate, those four elements of the deal, which one of those do you think that the investors find are the hardest to come by? The property, the money, coming up with the experience, or the team members? Just keep that in the back of your mind. I know from my experiences that most people would say that money is the hardest part of this business. And it's natural when you're getting started in the business and you don't have the money, that's typically your biggest hurdle. It's natural to believe that it is the hardest part. More people would be doing deals each and every day if they had an unlimited source of money available to them. While money isn't the topic of this discussion, it is going to be a big part of deal structuring, so just follow along. You're going to pick up a lot about money, how to get money as I go through this, but that's not specifically what I plan to address here. So money is the easiest part of the business. Most people don't believe it. I didn't believe it when I first got started, but I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt that money is the easiest part of this business today. I'm going to just share with you real quickly a transaction that I did recently. In fact, the house is going to settlement on June 1st, and we'll make about a $35,000 or $36,000 profit on this home. It's a rehab that we just pulled off. The house sold. We picked it up at auction, turned it over in a couple of weeks, and put it back on the market and got a contract on it. We'll settle on the 1st of June. In the case of this transaction, it took me 5 minutes to come up with the money to do this one. This was a property that I had purchased for $210,000. I simply went and put a email out there to a few people I knew, was looking for a joint venture partner. I did not want to make any of the payments. I just simply wanted to have them put up the money for the deal. What I did, the person then called me up, we talked about it, and they said, okay, I'm bringing a check over. And so we had $210,000 right there. Very easy. Obviously, I understand I've built up some of a reputation, so people trust me. But the key to it was that this was a very good deal for this person to be involved with. If I would have told this person that, hey, you put up $210,000 and you'll make, 5% on your money, and we'll turn it around real quickly. But you know, you're probably going to make $5,000 over the course of 3 or 4 months. They wouldn't have been interested in the deal. They wanted something greater than that. They were looking for a bigger return. So the key was that this person was going to get a good return on their money, and they just put the money up, no problem, to do the deal. So keep this in mind. In that particular case, it was a property that was a good deal. The money came from a joint venture partner who knew that this was a great deal for them. All they had to do was write a check, and they were going to get a really nice return on their money. And my experience was one of the things that helped pull that off. So money is the easiest part of the business. If the numbers work, then the deal can be structured properly. You have to bring something to the table in order to participate in a deal. So when you don't have any experience, when you don't have any money, and you don't know who the other players are, typically the thing that you're going to bring to the deal, which is the way that I got started, was I brought the property with the good numbers to the deal. I learned how to find deals. Now, just recently I put a post out on the forum. Somebody was asking, well, how do you get started in this business when you don't have anything? I can't emphasize enough that the one skill that everybody should try to develop is being able to find deals. Because when you're the person who can actually find the deal, then you control everything. When you find a deal, people with money want to be close to you. If you find a deal, then you're picking up the things that people with money need in order to make more money. So one of the key aspects to this is the deal. Money is very easy to get when you can pull the right deal into the equation. So understand that. If you're out there and you're finding properties and you're putting them under contract, and people with money are not interested in participating in that, chances are the deal isn't as good as you thought it was. And you need to sharpen your skills and do that. That is a skill that once you develop it, nobody can ever take it away from you. And it's a skill that you can use to make money from here to eternity. People who know how to find good deals will always be able to profit from that skill.
Quick question. I just want to make sure I have the right word. The first bullet point, if the numbers work, the deal can be structured properly, I believe numbers was the word. And then you just said where investors make their money is in controlling the deal. Is that right?
If the numbers – can you say the first one again?
If the numbers work, the deal can be structured properly.
That's correct, yep.
Okay. And then the third
and
one –
And then
where
investors do make their money by controlling the deal, controlling the property.
All right. Just want to make sure we have our blanks filled out for our type A personalities out there.
Okay. So as an investor, you make your money by finding the deals, and that's a completely other lesson. We'll teach finding deals in another lesson. But knowing that art is something nobody will ever take away from you. So here's something that I want everybody to contemplate. If I had you all here, I'd have you raising your hands and going over this with me, but I'd ask you this. If we had a deal that was brought to you and the after repair value of it was $150,000 and the purchase price was $110,000 and somebody needed and it needs $15,000 worth of work, how many people would be interested in purchasing that deal? I know that most people are not going to purchase that deal. The only people going to purchase that deal are going to be uneducated investors or somebody who's looking to move into that house themselves and get some sweat equity. An educated investor is typically not going to purchase that deal. There's just not enough spread in it. But if that same deal or the same house was being bought for $50,000, if it had $150,000 ARV and was being purchased for $50,000 and it needed $30,000 worth of work, people with money would be lining up to participate in that deal. Whether it's lending it to you, whether it's being willing to partner with you, or buying the deal from you with the wholesale fee attached to it, people with money would be very interested in that deal. Anybody who is on the phone who is doing deals understands this. The people out there who are rehabbers or landlords would be all over a deal like this one if it was presented to them. So one of the other things I'd like for you to contemplate is, let's say that somebody was picking up this house and they wanted to come to you and borrow the money. And they're picking up a house that's worth $150,000 and they're telling you that they want to borrow $135,000. Those of you who have the resources that are on the phone, you would not lend them the money to do that transaction. That's not a safe transaction for you. You're going to avoid doing it. The only time you would ever lend somebody that kind of money for that tight of a transaction is probably if it was a relative or one of your best friends who needed it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. But if it was $100,000 and you were well secured and you could get a nice return on your money, you would probably be interested in doing that deal. And the reason I want you to start just contemplating these things is so that you have an understanding of why people with money will participate in a deal. People who have money, they say that it takes money to make money. Well, people who have money, what they look for when they're going to invest it is opportunities that will make them a lot of money. They know that they're in a good position. They don't get involved in foolish transactions. They don't get involved in tight transactions. They get involved in profitable transactions. So keep that in mind. When you've got a good deal, people with money, you'll get their attention. Now, just to also think about it, if you're a person who has money available, and even if you don't have money, but it, you know, looking forward one day when you do, which of these transactions would you want to participate in? And ask yourself, would I partner in these transactions? If somebody needed $100,000 to pull off a $150,000 deal, would you put your money up in return for half of the profits? Many people will do that. They're certainly not going to put their money up for they won't put $135,000 up for a $150,000 deal. So I'm just sort of laying the groundwork here. I want you to understand that the money, it's completely dependent upon the deal. When the deal numbers work, then everything else will begin to fall into place. So here's another thing. I oftentimes lend people down payment money to do their deals. And this is going to be part of the deal structuring as we move forward, but I want you to have this understanding. Let's say that the only thing that's between you getting a deal done or having to back out of it is being able to come up with the down payment money. If you had a situation where you needed $20,000 down and you approached somebody who you knew who had that money and you offered them 10% of your profits, and you're expecting to make $30,000 on it. So if they put up 20, they'll get back their 20 plus $3,000 worth of your profits. It would be that you might find some people here or there who would be interested in doing that deal. But the likelihood of somebody lending you $20,000 to make $3,000 in an uncertain situation is probably going to be slim and close to none. It's much more difficult to do that. But now when you're getting started out, if you don't have anything else to bring to the table, let's assume that you offer them half of your profits, half of your anticipated $30,000 profit, and they could get $15,000 back on their 20. Just ask yourself how many people would put the money up then, and you're going to find that most people who have that kind of money, if they have any inkling to do this, would be willing to put the money up in that case if they felt good about the deal. So in this particular case, you're now addressing the reward part of it. The person who you're asking to participate in your deal, you're making the reward very attractive for them to participate in it. I'm not suggesting that you have to give up half of the profit. I'm just sort of sharing an example, the difference between making it really tight for somebody and not making it too attractive for them to participate. And the other side of that is making it very attractive so that they can't say no. So if you want to pull off your deals, you have to make it attractive to people with money to participate in the deal. So
what I'm hearing you say, said another way, is if the deal is truly a good deal, the money is easy.
Very easy. When it's a good deal and you can make everybody in the transaction feel comfortable and reward them handsomely for participating in it, the money is very easy to come by.
Okay.
All right, so we've got a few different types of lenders that we work with in order to pull deals off. You've heard me say this. If you've heard me say anything at all, you've heard me say this time and time again. We focus on small local banks. Your community banks are the best people to work with to get money. They're extremely flexible. They are much, much different than the big national banks. I'm not talking about Chase Manhattan or Wells Fargo or Bank of America or Wachovia or anything like that. Those are not the banks that we go to get money. That's where we get business lines of credit from, but we do not get our money to do our deals from those big banks. Instead, the types of banks that we get our money from to do deals are your small community banks. For instance, back in Maryland, some of the banks, just so all of you know, I don't live in Maryland anymore. I moved a couple months ago. So when I say back in Maryland, that's what I'm referring to. The small community banks that we worked with would have been just banks that had three or four branches or something like that. They don't have a whole lot of branches. Some of the banks had only one branch. That's it. They don't have a lot of assets. They can't lend you a whole bunch of money. Typically, they can only lend you 1% of their total assets. So one bank that I used quite a bit, they could only lend me $750,000 because they had only $75 million in total assets in the bank, which is a very small bank. They didn't have much at all. But the $750,000 was quite a bit of money. It was more than enough for me to do most of the transactions that I was doing at that time. So that's where I would go to for my money. Now, the key was that they didn't just make everything very easy. I did have to have down payment and things like that, but we'll talk about that here shortly. Private lenders are another source of money. When I talk about private lenders, I talk about individuals. These individuals could be hard money lenders, and they could be people who just have some money sitting in an IRA or a CD that they want to get a better rate of return. But I'm talking about individuals. I know a lot of people sort of break up private lenders and say, well, they're people who lend for less money than hard money lenders do. There's two different types of hard money lenders. And there are institutional hard money lenders, and then there are your private individuals. The institutions are companies that are lending out other people's money, just like a bank. They don't have the regulations that banks have, but that's sort of the way they operate. They do full-blown credit reports, and they have to do all their due diligence and appraisals to do deals. The private lenders that I'm talking about, they're people who, just individuals who make the decisions themselves, and they can make decisions within a minute as to whether or not they're going to do your deal. You're not filling out all kinds of applications, providing them with credit reports, meeting appraisers and having inspections done to the property. They don't operate that way. You want to, in time, build up a decent base of private lenders. Some people feel like that they need millions of dollars, and I'll tell you right now that most investors out there don't need more than a few $100,000 between a small local bank and a private lender. If you're in a high-priced market, you might need more than that. But most investors, a few $100,000, if you're a flipper, will accommodate most of your needs, because if you're in and out of the properties, you're continuing to free up the monies that are available to you. So don't feel like you need to have millions available. Those people who I've seen that have come up with millions have also gotten themselves into trouble because they spent millions and they couldn't manage all of that. So sometimes it's a blessing to not get too much. If you can get a half a million, that's great. You know, don't push to get more. Just make the most of what you have is what I would advise most people for. So anyway, these are the three types of lenders, small local banks, private lenders, and hard money lenders that you're going to want to have on board. If all you had were the small local banks and the private lenders, you're okay. I could do without the hard money lenders if you have good private lenders available to you. So seasoning is one of the key things that we need to address here right now. For those of you who don't understand what seasoning is, this is the amount of time that you've owned a property. So from the time that you take title to it, the time starts ticking. And there's a number of lenders out there, particularly the bigger ones, who have seasoning requirements. They're not going to finance a deal if you haven't owned it for a certain amount of time. For instance, some lenders out there have a 12-month seasoning requirement. They won't finance a new buyer if you've owned the property for less than 12 months. Some people have just a 90-day seasoning. Some have 6-month seasoning. But the bottom line is it's an issue when you're in this business. If you're a person who's wholesaling properties, you can't be dealing with lenders that have seasoning requirements. Your deals are not going to go through. So the best part about small local banks and private lenders is they don't have seasoning requirements. Some small local banks might have it. It's on a bank-by-bank basis. Most of the big banks do have this requirement, so that's the reason that we avoid them. We go to the small local banks, which are much more flexible. So this is no problem, or seasoning is no problem when you're using the right lenders. It is not a law. Frequently you will hear people say that there is a law. There is no law when it comes to seasoning. It's a lender rule, and it's a lender-by-lender decision. So keep that in mind. Anybody who ever tells you that it's illegal to sell a house in less than 90 days, they don't know what they're talking about. There is no such law out there. Okay, I want you to all understand the typical loan that the small local bank gives to an investor, and this is for a person who is going to purchase a house, rehab it, to resell. The typical loan that they give is an 80% loan-to-value renovation loan. And I'm going to go through some examples, and I will slow down. And, JP, if you feel like I'm not clear when I do go through some of the examples, please have me slow down or go over it again, because this is extremely important for people to understand this.
Absolutely. You know I will.
Okay. The lender will lend 80% of the purchase price at settlement when they do these 80% renovation loans. The lender will typically lend 100% of the renovation costs, and the total loan is not to exceed 80% of the after repair value. Now, some of these lenders will consider loaning your closing costs to you. They will consider putting together a payment escrow and lending you your payments. Small local banks can be flexible with credit, and they're not opposed to you borrowing your down payment when you do these deals.